Gossip Girl is obsessed with seasons. So yes. It's always like, well, yes, it's fall on the Upper East Side. Leaves are tumbling down, and so are reputations.
Oh, my God.
That's so good. Great.
Well, okay,
you're right.
Rewrite.
It's Groundhog Day in New York City. The groundhog saw his shadow, but there's no shadow of a doubt that love is coming to Madison and 13th Street.
This is Pod Crushed,
the podcast that takes the sting out of rejection, one crushing middle school story at a time.
And where guests share their teenage memories, both meaningful and mortifying.
And we're your hosts. I'm Nava, a former middle school director.
I'm Sophie, a former fifth grade teacher.
And I'm Penn, a middle school dropout. Okay, so let's get into what everyone wants to hear about. How do we make a TikTok? I just want to stop. I just want to shut down as I say that. No, you know what's really cool? The fact that we did anything in the realm of a skit with who I'm about to mention is a little insane.
Bold.
I mean,
it's really bold. Arrogant?
It's arrogant maybe that we asked.
Yeah.
But it's not because he's such a lovely guy. I'm just going to go into talking about our guests a little bit. We made a skit with Conan O'Brien. Yeah. And it was real off the cuff, and he was encouraging.
You know, and I want to say I was the one who asked him. I took one for the team.
I would never have been able to.
And I, as Sophie, maybe too bold, maybe a combination of bold and arrogant was why I'm the one who asked. And Conan said, sure, I'm a reasonable person. And that response really struck me because I was thinking that he, like, knew that it took courage to ask him and that there are a lot of people in his position who would say no. Mm. And I was really struck by that, that he, like, even kind of acknowledged it in his response.
I would say that characterizes him in a lot of ways. When I was on his show a few weeks ago, which isn't coming out for a little bit, but because I'm real low on the order of priority, they've got everybody.
It's a holiday
from,
episode.
Yeah. No. I'm not a holiday episode. I'm a January episode, which means you know you're just like yeah. Just put them up on the shelf. No. Conan, I would say. I don't know, just a lovely, encouraging person to be such a pillar of the world of public conversations in media, you know?
Mm. I went into our recording session extremely nervous. At one point in the beginning of the interview, I picked up my water bottle and my hand was shaking so much that I had to hold it with two hands.
Like a baby.
So nervous. Yeah, exactly. But part of that was that, yeah, Penn and Nava, you had met him before. You had spent a little bit of time with him. And so.
And we excluded you.
Yep, I know. It's becoming a pattern. But this was my first time meeting him, and so I was really nervous. But he was incredibly warm and very kind to me. I felt like he could tell how nervous I was and probably could tell that that dynamic existed, that he had spent some time with the two of you, but not with me. Mm. Yeah. But he made like special eye contact with me during the episode, I felt like. And I think it was because he just wanted to make me feel comfortable. And I really appreciate that, just like very conscientious.
The other thing I would say about Conan, and I hope this doesn't sound like a dig because none of it is a dig. He's obviously hilarious when you like listen to him and watch him on TV. But in person, it's funnier.
Not funny at all.
No, it's funnier. Penn and I were reflecting on this when Penn did his interview. Like, of course, he's so funny. He wouldn't have the career he has if everyone didn't recognize it. But in person, it's like to another level. And it's something about, I think, the way that he embodies it and the warmth. It's like somehow that part you can't necessarily feel through a screen. But in person, it's like, I just was like, I don't think I've ever been around someone so funny.
Hey, guys, I have an idea. Why don't we just stop talking about him and start talking to him?
Love it.
Conan Christopher O'Brien is best known for his 28 years hosting late night talk shows. I mean, I've been watching him since I was 13. He's got his award-winning podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which I'm sure you've heard of. Most recently, his All Conan, All the Time radio channel, Team Coco Radio on Sirius XM, a company we have no affiliation with. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for... Actually, we're going to have to be right back. Stick around.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I saw a bit that you did on Colbert. It was sort of like a twofer. You talked about finding out that you were 100% Irish.
Yeah, it's a true story. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
That's kind of rare, right?
Pretty yes.
Rare.
No, if you go to Ireland and take and genetically test everyone, you'll find that people are 80% Irish, but like 10%, you know, Spaniard, but 10% Dutch. Everybody's a mixture of everything, and when I found out that I was 100% Irish, I said to the guy who gave me the result, I went, "So that's good, right?"
And he said, "Aced the test."
Yeah, like I got 100%. As I know from my college days, 100% is pretty good. And he looked at me and he was like, "No." I said, "What does it mean?" He said, "It means you're inbred." It means you people are just a bunch of the Irish hillbillies that probably lived on the same farm. And but yeah, it's hard to do. And I come from a long line of people who just married other 100% Irish people and have been doing and would find them in central Massachusetts because we've been here since the Civil War. So that means that people were here in the United States where you could meet all kinds of people, but they were living in farm country.
And cousin, just again and again. Yeah.
"Hey, I just met you in the bathroom. You must live in my house. Let's get married." And
that's convenient.
Yeah.
But in the bit, you talk about, you describe yourself as having a short torso.
I don't know. Go ahead. Self-describing.
A short
body
torso.
Body shame Conan, please, right now.
You seemed horrified when I walked in. You did seem.
I was like, oh my God, he was
no, I have, right. I was very self-conscious.
What I was getting to. Yeah. What was it like in middle school?
One of the things that was difficult is that my legs were always really long. Hmm. And so I always had what kids then called floods, meaning my pants didn't go down far enough.
Mm. Oh. Right.
And I hated that. And so you could see like a lot of ankle, sock and ankle. Sometimes even some shin, like you know what I mean. I looked like I was wearing one of those German, when Germans go off to the countryside and they wear those leather shorts. I mean, it was ridiculous. So my pants didn't fit, and I hated that. And kids used to make fun of, like, "Hey, where's the flood?" was the joke back then. "Hey, kid, where's the flood? Hey, Conan, where's the flood?" I didn't like all the things that later on I came to be happy about. I did not like. I didn't like. It took me a while to get really tall. That didn't happen till later. But I did not like my clothes. I didn't like having an interesting first name. And I didn't like having red hair. I really didn't like having freckles. I wanted to sort of look more like an Elvis Presley type. I just wanted like black hair.
Yeah.
And I wanted to look more normal. And I wanted a name like Jack Blaze, you know. I didn't want to be Conan. And so there were all these things that just felt, I felt allergic to a lot of my reality. And then it's so interesting, but that's the stuff later on that works for you. And I think it's a blessing to be in touch with that later on in life. I do think there are people who have an awkward middle age experience, you know, middle school experience. I've had an awkward middle age experience. But there are people that have an awkward middle school experience and then things start to work for them and they grow into their body and they feel pretty good about themselves and they have success and they actually forget or act like that other part didn't really happen. And I think it's good to remember that that part happened and let other people know without mistake that that happened. That was a reality. And I felt, and because, you know, Ben, you know this, like our business is filled with people who are good-looking, successful, and because our society puts actors or comedians, you know, puts them on a pedestal, everyone's led to believe that that is what they've always been. And they don't realize that, A, some of these people are miserable right now.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them are.
Yeah.
Or they're okay now, but they had a terrible, awkward phase when no one was photographing them, you know?
So. Yeah.
Well, that is the spirit of the show in a way. I mean, I remember this period of life as the hardest.
Right. Well, we talked about it, and it's so funny because, you know, when you first hit with Gossip Girl, anybody who was watching you then, any of the people that age would have thought you are the dictionary definition of someone who's never had an awkward moment or a down moment.
Which is funny, though, because I think you're right in a lot of ways, but I was still cast to play the awkward guy, which is so many levels
but also awkward guy, meaning...
On a TV show.
Awkward guy on a TV show that everybody was in love with. Anyway, you know what I mean? So, so it was, yes, you're right, but... I mean, I think if you had been able to tell fans then at that time, you'd understand 5 years ago,
I was really in a bad
place and I felt really lonely and, you know, my family was moving around and I didn't feel like I belonged anywhere, whatever. They wouldn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
They'd say, what are you talking about? You know.
No, completely. And that's the weird thing where the compounded pressure on middle schoolers and high schoolers is that version... A 20-year-old who'd been through it and was finally gaining some reprieve, although to be fair, actually, some of the years during Gossip Girl, the specter of fame always causes periods of intense discomfort, I think, for everybody at some point. You know, you go through waves with it. But still, yes, I presented as together. I presented as mature for someone playing a teen. I presented as all these things, and yet I was still the version of awkward. So, like, kids who think that they're meant to look like this and act like this, you know, and be in these like sexy relationships and suave relationships.
Oh my God, yeah.
Every time you go to a party, you're just like, yeah, I just got to throw on this tux. You know, you're just wearing, you're being dressed by other people. You know, it's something that I thought about a lot then.
And I think even that's the case with people who aren't celebrities. Like, I remember feeling that way.
Wait,
about
are we going to talk about people who aren't celebrities now?
No, that's not what we have a podcast for.
No.
I think his hour's up.
Excuse me?
Was this not in the writer?
We're not talking about... Why the fuck would I talk about regular people? Why did you bring me here? Excuse me, Penn, you were talking about being really famous. Jesus, let's keep this thing on track.
Let me talk about Gossip Girl.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I remember feeling that about my friends. And recently, I reconnected with a friend from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we had fallen out. And I couldn't remember why. And so I just reached out to her. I was like, what happened? Why did we fall out? Big mistake. Never write
Never
somebody
you?
From years ago and ask why you fell out. No, it actually ended up in a really sweet connection between the two of us. But one thing that we realized was we both felt like the other person was so confident, so aware of themselves and sure of themselves. And we needed to take time apart from each other to be able to feel that on our own. But we both felt that about the other person,
right.
And we just never talked about it.
I think that's the thing. It's exacerbated now by social media, and is that everyone's always putting out there the best version of themselves. So everything's curated. I mean, photos are curated.
Yeah.
Experiences are curated. No one's posting. Just got dumped, or I'm here in a bad restaurant, and they won't wait on me. Or everything is
that's a what TikTok is for.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's a peak moment.
Yeah.
Everything's a peak experience. And so naturally when people scroll, they get depressed because they are having this sense, this FOMO, this sense that everyone else is living this amazing experience, which isn't true.
Yeah. I still feel, I mean, being so conscious of that doesn't help that feeling, by the way, which is interesting. Yeah. Right. I feel like when I get on social media, I'm immediately plunged back into that dynamic. I really imagine everybody being better than me. And it's like, that's not how I feel all the time. Mm. It's just now, it's like that.
You usually feel like you're better than everyone else, right?
Generally speaking. Yeah.
That, again, Penn and I are on the same page.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
we both think we're the best versions of a human being.
There's also this other weird thing
you're
that's 100%.
happening.
100%. I'm
100%. So you are, in a way.
Exactly.
There's also this other weird thing that's happening where not only are we comparing ourselves to the other people we see on social media, but we have created now over the last like 10, 15 years, this archive of our own lives. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is not real. Like if people are using filters, if they're editing their pictures, and even if they're not doing any of that, if they're just taking pictures of the most beautiful moments, the times when they're the happiest, then when you look back on your life, you're comparing your current state to a state that didn't actually totally exist in reality.
Do you have that thing where on your phone, I have an Apple phone and an iPhone, and it you won't expect it, but you'll just get up in the morning and you brush your teeth, whatever, and then you grab your phone and it's curated this little music video for you.
Yeah,
and
memories.
Your life.
Memories.
And memories.
It's
and
amazing,
so,
actually.
And it is absolutely amazing, but I'm not ready for it ever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you know, I just got out of the house and I'm going to, and I'm just going to look down at my phone and all of a sudden I hear this incredible song, like, you know, Sound of Silence or something. Hello, darkness, my old friend. And I see, oh my God, I'm in Bermuda. I have come to talk with you. Oh my God, my wife is beautiful. Oh my God, my children are so young. We're carving pumpkins. And I'm not ready, and it's this huge emotional rush. Yeah. And I think there's no lead-in to it.
So interesting.
There's never, and I just always put the phone down and go like, that was, I guess it's over now, but it was a great life.
Exactly.
Conan, speaking of things you're not prepared for, we actually dug up, one of our producers dug up a clip that we wanted to play for you. Let's listen to this.
Hi, I'm Conan O'Brien, and here we are with Kate O'Brien, the softball star. Hey, Kate, how you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Hey, Kate, I understand you're on the softball team, your freshman year in high school.
Yeah, I was. I was out there in the outfield, left, center, you know, the whole bit.
What do you consider your specialty in the field?
Oh, just about everything.
I hear you're pretty good.
Oh, a lot of people have heard that, you know.
They've heard it mostly from you, I hear.
No, that's incredible. That was from, man, I would be, I'm going to say that's early 1970s, and I'm probably, I don't know, 10 years old or 11 years old. Mm-hmm. But I do sound like a kid who grew up, or who's a child in the Depression.
Yeah, fully. Really, you'd actually discovered time travel.
Even the tape quality sounds.
Yes, I mean, I know, it's ridiculous.
It's amazing.
And I'm being a little wise guy, and I'm working on my timing and my patter. But yes, that's a great clip to play because that guy doesn't know what he's doing.
You sound
But
really,
I love the little
confident
laugh at the end. That was my favorite, the little ha-ha.
Yeah.
The very end.
Woody Woodpecker. Yeah, they had mostly from yourself. Nah. That's so me putting a laugh in case there is no laugh.
Yeah, yeah, that's your laugh track.
You know what I should do? I should have done that throughout my career, whenever I made a joke. And anyway, but if you ask me, that's more like Bill Clinton. Nah. Just in case there was no laugh.
So you were interviewing your younger sister.
Yeah, I have two younger sisters. That's Kate. I have another younger sister, Jane, but that's just me doing a stand-up interview with my sister, Kate, who was quite athletic. And so I was interviewing her about all the different sports that she likes to play.
I love the banter between you two. It was really cute.
Well, you know what's nice is my brothers and sisters are really funny. Mm. I think they're proud that I've had this success, but they don't really care, and all of them put me down all the time.
Really?
In a good way.
No, that's healthy. That's like healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good. I think it's verges on abuse. But it is healthy, and my kids are like that. They're just, they roll their eyes. My career is, I think on some level they're proud of it, but they're it's not a big part of their life or their world. And when I do something ridiculous, they let me know how stupid that was. And I think that's good. It's just this loving gravity.
Yeah.
It's a kind gravity that just keeps you like a weighted blanket from spinning out of control.
My siblings are like that too. They definitely keep me humble. But you were one of six?
Yeah.
What was that like growing up, one of six? Did you do a lot of
crowded
stuff like that with your siblings?
Yes,
like, did a lot of
A lot of fake fighting. I used to love, and real fighting, but a lot of fighting with my brothers and a lot of people giving each other a hard time. There was not a lot of, and this is probably very typically Irish Catholic, but there's not a lot of direct, you know, can I talk to you for a second?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of hurt my feelings when you said that. That none of that happened. It was, everything was done with sarcasm and humor. And I learned that that was the way to communicate with people, was joking around and kind of letting them know that you're unhappy. But if they called you on it, say, no, I'm just, what are you talking about? I'm just kidding. I'm fine. And so I'm not saying any of that's healthy.
It's, I was like, how about now? You feel that thing?
But if taken to an extreme, you can monetize it.
Yes.
Which is
that's
true of men. Which
Conan
is true of just about.
For 12-year-olds.
Which is true. Hey, you 12-year-olds out there, if you're feeling a lot of emotional pain, remember, take that to an extreme and you can monetize it and be an unhealthy person in show business.
Conan, I want to ask you a middle school question just that we haven't gotten to, which is when you had a crush on someone, what were you like? And could you tell us about your first love and heartbreak?
Well, there was this girl that I, in fifth grade that I was had a huge crush on, and her first name was Laura, and I just was I remember her last name, but I feel like if I out her, you know, she might say, you creep, and accuse me of stalking her, you know, 50 years later. But her name was Laura, and I remembered my skin temperature would change when she was around. You know what I mean? Like,
you feel like you're running
a little bit of a fever. And I don't think she ever really noticed me. And then I remembered she got a little gothy later on, which I thought was even cooler. Years later, I think when I was in college, she did not go to the same college, but I saw her once like at an outdoor cafe and she said, oh, hey, Conan. And I was like, oh, hi, immediately like my voice cracked. She's like, oh, Conan, your voice hasn't changed, but you're, you're 40. What's going on? And, but I remembered very much being, and not knowing what to do. And I was a late bloomer, so... Not having, I mean, I, you know, didn't start dating till later. And, you know, I was not, there were kids. I remember there were kids when I was 12. When I was 12, I looked 8. Mm. When these other kids were 12, they had to shave like twice a day.
Right.
And they were just confident in how they walked and with their bodies. And they had girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
And you were like, how is that? How am I even the same species as that guy?
Yeah,
he's my. And I check. You're my. How old are you again?
Yeah,
I'm 12.
Duncan's like, me
why?
Too.
Yeah, I'm 12 too. Dude, what do you share?
I just shaved 10 minutes ago.
But you got a full beard.
I know.
Yeah, that's so
I gotta
so
go
true,
drive a truck
actually.
Now.
Drive a truck. You're 12.
Yeah.
I remember. I used to teach fifth grade and. I had some students who would, like, bring in stuffed animals into the classroom and then some who were, like, dealing weed. You know, like, it was, like, really...
No. Was that you, Sophie? Were you the weed dealer?
Yeah. No, but I think that...
No, just for legal purposes, it was not me.
The disparities then are mind-numbing. And then there are kids that are just ready for things and other kids that aren't ready for things. And, you know, I have two kids, and I remember my goal for them, and I would talk about it with my wife, was I'd like them to grow up slowly. Like, our job is to make sure they grow up as slowly as possible.
Yeah,
I want them to be excited about Christmas for as long as possible. I want them to be kids for as long as possible, because all the other stuff will come, the disappointments and different kinds of pain, but let's just see how long we can... I want them to be giddy and excited about things in a youthful, childish way for as long as possible.
Yeah.
How old are they now?
They are, my daughter's 19 and my son turned 17 today.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's his name?
His name's Beckett.
He's not going to hear it today, but happy birthday, Beckett.
Yeah, and he very much, I've never missed a birthday of his, but, and that's a pact we have. And I said, I can't be with you today because I need to go to this podcast in New York.
Please, no.
And he said, well, is it a podcast you could do another time? And he said,
I told Penn I'd do it.
And he said, you're clearly joking. And I said, I'm not. And I'm leaving you right now. This is so I flew here. And my wife says that he's despondent and won't come out of his room.
And your
podcast, and the purpose of your podcast is to help children my son's age?
Only on the surface, Conan. Only for the numbers.
The irony.
It all comes down to the bottom line.
I flew here at my own expense.
We all work for Sirius. Okay.
No, but it is fun. I mean, that's a whole other experience when you have your own kids. And mm-hmm. I know you have gone through this. I don't know if you guys don't have any. You have not crossed this Rubicon.
If you know anyone nice, Conan, please let me know.
To be your child?
Are you adopted?
Yeah. you're okay. I thought you meant if you know any nice people that want to be your child.
Stick around. We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
A question that we love to ask anyone who comes on the show is to share an embarrassing story from middle school. Do you have any that you can share?
Have any? That's like...
Can you narrow it down?
I'm trying really hard to narrow it down. I remember in middle school, I was very interested in comedy. I was very interested in performing. And so a friend of mine and I, his friends, I'll shout him out. Jake Fleischer was my best friend. And we decided we were going to write a play. And it was actually a musical. Now, we didn't write the music. We just took existing tunes and wrote different
lyrics. So you wrote the pilot of Glee.
Exactly. Yes, we did. Yeah. It was, and I'm still suing the Glee people because I think they ripped me off. But so we did this. We wrote this play. It was so ridiculous because my friend and I, we wrote this thing about two guys who are down on their luck. And they meet up and they're like, hey, I like the cut of your jib. And the other guy's like, yeah, you look like you've got the skinny. Hey, let's form up a team. You bet. Dun, 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 dun. We're going to do the best we can, you know, whatever. And it's like, you know, the year was 1974 or something. And we're writing this bullshit thing that feels like it's from 1920. But that was not even the embarrassing part. The embarrassing part is we had a very supportive public school. And they said, you know what? Conan and Jake, they wrote this play, and it's got music in it. God bless them. We're going to let the whole school come see it.
Ugh.
So big school. This is the Michael Driscoll School in Brookline, Massachusetts. Big auditorium. Everybody got out of class to come see this play.
Oh, my gosh.
Like a special performance. It wasn't a talent show or anything.
And it was like,
just,
you know, hey, some kids wrote a play. And it's, you know,
just the two of you.
And it was just the two of us. Okay.
Jake
so
and Conan.
I'm not even at the embarrassing part yet. This is the best part. So we go to the whole school's there. And I remembered us being backstage and you can hear the crowd out there. And this is exciting. And so it was a two-act. You know, there was one act, and then the curtain comes down like, we're going to give it our best shot. Dun, bump. Curtain comes down, and then you see what happens when we fall from grace in the second act. Keep in mind, again, the whole play is maybe 18 minutes. So we're out there for 9 minutes in the top. The curtain comes down. curtain goes back up again, and we do the second 9 minutes, and that's the show. I had just recently, for the first time, been to New York, and someone, my parents had taken me to a Broadway show, and I, like a total ass, timed the intermission. It was 25 minutes. And so I remembered very clearly talking this down the day of the show, and I said, all right, the curtain will go down after the 9 minutes. And then Jake said, yeah, and then we'll just, you know, change to our different hats, and the curtain will go right back up again. And I went, no, Jake. A true intermission is 25 minutes. And he went, what do you mean? I said, it's 25 minutes.
Jake had some sense.
We had no scenery. We had no costumes, really. There was no changeover. Nothing had to happen. But I was such a dick. I was like, I'm telling you, I've been to a Broadway show. So we did this 9 minutes bullshit thing. The curtain comes down and kids are out of school. Yeah. They're happy. Yeah. They're like, hey, all right, whoa. We're backstage 5 minutes. 10 minutes. Oh, and you can hear, like, people are thinking, what is going on? And then 25 minutes, curtain goes up, and people were pissed.
I'm amazed they stayed.
They had to. Yeah, they had to stay. And so afterwards, we're like, thanks, everybody! You know, and then we're wandering around the Michael Driscoll School playground afterwards, waiting just to be congratulated.
Right.
And I remembered kids coming up, and they were like, what the fuck? What were you doing for 25 minutes? And I said, it's called an intermission.
It's show business.
You know, yeah, and then I remembered teachers coming over and going, can we talk to you for a second? What were you doing for 25 minutes?
Nobody came up and said, listen, kids.
I think they, like, no one knew, and there was very much like, well, we assume that they're building this incredible set. They're doing something. And then curtain comes back up again, and we've done nothing. Nothing's done.
So
it's like if we stop this podcast right now, and I said, it's time for the intermission, and we just sat here like idiots for 25 minutes and then came back. And so everybody was mad. to this day, I just can't believe I was that stupid.
Did you have to, like, force Jake back?
Yes.
From, he was like, Conan, we gotta pull the cord, man.
I'm telling you, exactly. No, Jake, to his credit, and I've encountered Jake many times since then, and again, shout out to Jake Fleischer, who also survived this terrible calamity.
Jake.
But he was like, come on, let's just go now, it's been 15. I said 25. Are you want to be in Broadway or not? What
dictator.
Are we? Yeah, I was so, I was
but
an incredible
look who
idiot.
Came out victorious.
I know.
So,
well, I was going to ask you, did that continue for the rest of your childhood? Your interest in performing?
Yeah, I was always interested in it, but I did think, I lived in Boston and we felt like 1,000 miles and 1,000 years away from show business. There was just no encounter with show business. So, I wasn't around people in show business. My parents are professionals. My dad's a, research scientist. My mom's a, lawyer. They're serious people. And so I was very interested in it and then said, well, anyway, I want to make something of myself, so I'll just buckle down in school.
Mm-hmm.
And I was highly anxious kid and but in a good way channeled it into, I'm so worried about doing well in school that I was a grind, so I studied a lot, and that ended up in a crazy turn of events, enabled me to go to a really good college that happened to have a humor magazine that was the oldest and most famous humor magazine in America, the Harvard Lampoon. And so by trying to give up this dream and work really hard to be a serious student and go to the big school that people want to go to and be serious, I ended up a week after showing up there, someone said, you should go check out the Lampoon. And I was like, the Lampoon? All right. So I went and checked it out.
Yeah.
And got in first semester freshman year, which was a bit unusual. And then, bang, that changed my life.
Yeah. Well,
then I was all comedy all the time. So my best efforts to not pursue this led me right back to it.
I love
that. When was your... go ahead.
No, I was saying, in your, like, lowest moments in your career, did you ever regret it? Were you like, I wish I had done this, like, other standard path, or have you always?
Oh God, like, no! I always knew. I was doing a. It was when I was first a writer for Saturday Night Live in 1988, and I was a young lad. And this writer's strike, I get hired at SNL. It's the dream job. So excited. I do a couple of shows, and this writer's strike hits. And so suddenly, Bob Odenkirk, who is a writer shared an office with, and Robert Smigel,
wow.
They said to me, "Hey, Conan, we're going to go to Chicago and just do like a silly show of sketches that would never make it on SNL. You seem like the kind of guy that would want to come with us. Do you want to do it?" And I said, "Yes, I do." Yeah,
right up your alley.
So I remember doing this show at the Victory Gardens Theater in Chicago in 1988 called Happy, Happy, Good Show. And, you know, reviews weren't good. Audience was tiny. I had a terrible car. I had a 1973 Plymouth Valiant. I had no air conditioning. It was really hot that summer. I was always hungry. Just because my metabolism was crazy, and I remember being very physically uncomfortable all the time. But the fact that I was doing this show, I remember thinking, I will do this for free before anything else. If I've never, ever, ever thought, you know, law school would have been good for me. Mm. I think I would have been a terrible lawyer. And,
So what were you trying to, you said a moment ago, giving up the dream. When did that dream form, and then when did you feel like you had to turn away from it?
I think I was very interested in show business, and I was one of six kids, and we would see old movies would come on, and I would watch them, and I would think, oh my God, I want to be like a showman. I want to be that looks so cool, and so I asked my parents. Again, all my ideas about show business were incredibly out of time and incorrect because it's the 70s. Some cool stuff is happening out there. And I was like, you know what? I'm watching movies from the 1930s where people tap dance. So I told my parents, you know what? I'm kind of interested in show business. I need to learn to tap dance. Guess what? No, you don't. You don't have to learn. Led Zeppelin is on the charts. No one's tap dancing
in
Led Zeppelin. Yeah, I know. But again, I was wrong. But I went, to their credit, they found me this really old, wonderful man who taught tap dancing in near the Berklee School of Music in Boston named Stanley Brown. That's who had learned from Bill Bojangles Robinson.
Wow.
He was this old, like, I want to say 70-year-old black man who, and all of the people there, everybody was black except me. There was this one orange-haired boy who looked like the Wendy's logo. And I would come in and I'd be like, "Hi, everybody, got my shoes." And they'd just be looking at me.
You're like, oh, this guy.
And like these incredibly sexy women who were doing modern tap and jazz tap. And I'm like, "Hi, everybody, anyone have a cane and a straw hat?" You know, one, two, shuffle off to Buffalo. And so I was pursuing that. And then I think at some point, I want to say probably around sixth grade, I just thought, what are you doing? There's no, you know.
Is that something you could pull out of your back pocket now? Like if someone gave you tap shoes?
Not really. I know a step or two, but not really. And no, it was.
You know, I took tap for a moment.
I was going to say, I feel like there should be a tap off.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And there's nothing better for a podcast than a dance off.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just going to hear people going like,
they're tapping right now.
And you two going like, this is incredible.
Yeah, we'll go back to Conan Ryan R tap. Dancing in this studio, but you can't.
The pen just took it up a notch. No, Conan's in the lead. Now pen!
This is sounding like F1.
Yeah. Back flip. Front flip.
So how do you feel in terms of your, I don't want to say career, but in terms of this craft that you've been developing for decades now?
Right.
You, I think, very much are a case of evolution because Look, I was never on your show.
I wouldn't allow you on, remember? we had a, you know the way if someone passes a bad check at a supermarket, they put up a picture of them and say, this person is not allowed. We had a picture in Rockefeller Center of Ben Bashian and said, this man is not to be allowed on the late night program.
Happened.
Yeah. And it's because he passed a bad check at our show. So it all comes back around.
Yeah.
But no, it's funny because we managed to just pass each other, but never really connect.
I don't know. I mean, I think I wasn't quite in a. I was on your show recently, and I didn't feel worthy then. I mean, this goes back. This is why we have a show about middle school exploring the ideas of self-worth, but. But anyway, this is not about me not being on your show. What I was interested in, we can
not
talk
being
about
allowed
that more.
On my show.
Yes, that's right.
Let's say it correctly.
For reasons of criminal trespass. Yeah,
which I kind of like the ring of that. Yeah. But you now are able to do something in a format that was just simply not available.
Yeah.
Or feasible. It wasn't interesting. It wasn't marketable. And you are, you know, like, amongst one of the early adapters, as we say in the realm of podcasting.
Yeah.
I think we say. I just loved being able to be on your podcast and to speak for, because I just love speaking at length.
As we
and
can
so
see.
It was great.
Yeah. This is going
we
somewhere
know
fun,
about
right?
this.
No, he did a 6-hour podcast. I didn't get a word in edgewise.
I believe it.
How do you feel about your ability to evolve this format and to...
Well, first of all, I feel very fortunate that there was people working for, you know, 15, 20 years on podcasts, you know, trailblazers that started this thing. And what I feel really fortunate about is that, and it's total luck, but I had some really smart people around me 5 years ago who said, you should do a podcast. And at the time, I was thinking, well, I have a TV show. And so why would I do a podcast? And they said, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you just go down, we've set up a microphone, and screw around a little bit. And I had a blast. And so that's how it started, was just trying things. And so one of the messages that I've tried to impart to younger people is you're not penalized for failing as much as you think you will be. You know, clearly if you try to jump a canyon and you don't make it, the penalty is quite high.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I try to encourage people in middle school and also people in high school, college. Mm-hmm. We have this society that can be quite forgiving of screwing up. So you can try things and they don't necessarily work out. But you'll learn a lot. And I think having that philosophy has helped me a lot because a bunch of things haven't always worked out, but you just keep throwing things out there. You keep trying, keep moving, keep trying to evolve a little bit. And people tend to remember you for the things that do work.
I like that.
Which is nice. I think you're remembered for, most often you're remembered, someone told me years ago, it's this brilliant Simpsons writer named George Meyer. He said, I think people are remembered for their good work. It's not like people walk around and recite, you know, man, that they just they, when they talk about Herman Melville, they talk about, you know, Moby Dick. They they don't talk about, oh my God, you see, read that third book, the one that's about the, the cracker,
true.
You know, the salty cracker. That's terrible. they don't talk about that. They talk about the good tends to stick in people's thoughts and minds. So why not try? Why not try a bunch of things and don't
that's so
sweat?
So encouraging, Conan.
It is.
Yeah.
Do you think that's true in middle school, however? Because it does seem to be a bit inverse.
Well, the thing in middle school, I think, is people feel like everything, any mistake.
Yeah, you're hyper-aware.
You're hyper-aware, and you're so self-conscious. And so you think, oh, my God, I just destroyed my life.
Yeah.
I just destroyed my life because I embarrassed myself in front of the class, or I screwed up, and I'm done. And I remember feeling that way all the time when I was young, like, I am done.
Yeah.
I am. And I remember, you know, I'd be like, there are 15-year-olds who are like, well, it's over for me. I remember I knew a kid in middle school who thought that he had peaked in fourth grade. And it was it was like and it was like 3 years later, and he was like, "Remember me in fourth grade?"
Like, and I say, like, "Yeah, his comedy."
He
what
just
was
thought
it?
That he had hit it. He was really cool. He was new to the school. Everyone thought he was a great guy. And then he thought, "Yeah, fourth grade." And I thought, "Oh my God, so to think that that was your peak."
Yeah.
And I think somewhere, I swear to God, this kid, this guy now who's my age, is wandering around telling people, fourth grade, man. Should have seen me
fourth
in fourth
grade. Fourth grade is a good year.
I like the mission of this podcast because I think I try to be very honest with people about awkwardness, and I think it's been a big part of my career and various difficulties and seeing the humor in it. But I think kids, I call them kids, but middle school, kids that are middle school age get a incredibly, they're bombarded with so much, and they do, the biggest mistake is they don't realize that other people are feeling the same stuff that they're feeling. Yeah. They don't understand that other and that people, you know, grow and mature at different rates. And so it's really fascinating to me to see, all of this wisdom does come with age. Like, I know we have a youth-obsessed culture, but I do think that when you're around longer, you do start to understand things that you can't understand in any other way than just being alive, long enough, which kids don't, they don't have that perspective.
Mm-hmm. It's totally true. So our podcast is called Pod Crushed with the ED, and the reason sort of initially was our idea
just
was like,
marketing.
Let's take the sting out of rejection.
It looked good on a t-shirt.
Yeah, it would just look better than Pod Crushed. Mm-hmm. No, like, take the sting out of rejection. Like, send us your stories of, like, a time in life that you were, like, crushed by something, because that's universal, and you'll get past it, and one day you'll even, like, laugh about it. That was, like, our initial premise. And I think that we've seen that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
No one escapes it. And also sometimes that's, like, character building, and it's actually always important that we have those moments.
I think a lot of it is confidence, and confidence comes with time. Now, as I said earlier, some people have it at a very early age, but it took me so long to build up my confidence.
Yeah.
It was just took for, it just felt like it took forever.
Yeah.
In middle school, I don't care who you are, you need something. You don't know what it is other than attention.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you call it love. You're probably not comfortable with that word.
I'm still not comfortable with that word.
I've never called it love.
I'm 77 years old, and I'm not comfortable with the concept of telling someone I love them or I need love from them.
I was like, wow, you look really good for 77.
I've had a ton of work. When Penn first met me, he was just stunned by the amount of work I've had done and how bad
it is. You could tell right away, yeah.
I went for the least expensive. You can't beat this guy's prices. So that's where I went. $1,100 to get your face completely recut. Well, you know, first of all, I'll tell you the title of my podcast is Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
That's right.
Which is a joke, but also not a joke. But also a joke. So it's one of those things that just kind of flips around. But, you know, it's interesting because I, you know, you're talking about this period of life, you know, middle school, where you don't realize it at the time, but you're only like half cooked at that point. You're like, if you took a muffin out of the oven after 6 minutes, it's not, it wouldn't be batter anymore, but it's not a muffin.
How long does a muffin cook for?
Well, it depends.
Your altitude.
It's not the point.
Sorry, I'm
I do a lot of my baking at the top of Machu Picchu, where it takes up to 9 hours. But yeah, people are not, they're not formed yet. And when I look, I remember very clearly in middle school thinking, this is, I guess, who I am, and being very dissatisfied with it and not understanding that no, you've got, there's, you're
so long.
It takes
so long. Like now, I just turned 36 and I feel like I'm honestly just starting to really lighten up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I've heard 40 is even better.
Well, I got some bad news for you. Yeah, but see, the thing is, you're all very young, and you are going to still keep evolving. That's what people don't realize is that there's this evolution that happens that continues. So I think that I'm somewhat mellower now than I was even 10 years ago. when I'm, by the definition of anyone in this room, I was old then, you know? Mm. I'm 59, so I still think I was forming in my 40s into my 50s. Like, it just takes a long time.
That's very hopeful. The other day I had this realization. Actually, I was watching This Is Us. I was watching the finale, and I don't, you know, it gets
just
a little
weeping
cheesy.
Uncontrollably.
It's a little cheesy. But I realized, like, I'm 28, and I can sometimes feel like I am put out to pasture. Like, it's over.
Are you a millennial?
It's over for me. I'm on the cusp. I'm like, I'm 94, and I think 96 is Gen Z. So it's like, you know, cuspy. And yeah, I just find that really hopeful, that there's so much that happens throughout life and that you continue evolving and that it's not over.
It's not completely hopeful, because what happens soon is I'll start de-evolving. That's the problem. I'm going to start losing.
So where's that peak moment?
Yeah. I am 2 years. I think right now,
isn't it?
I'm 2 years into de-evolving. I think my peak was like 2 years ago, and now I think it's just I can't come up with that person's name. It just took me an hour to urinate. we don't have to get specific.
Can we go?
Your bodies are going to fall apart.
And we'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. With over 350 million global monthly visitors, Indeed's matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You get to ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. It's not just about hiring faster, though. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Don't search. Match with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I know, because I was able to sit in on your interview with Penn, that you are a Gossip Girl stan, and I wanted to know.
Stan seems like a...
I feel like Conan was a stan, but...
Well, what happened was my kids discovered the show, the original show, like 2-3 years ago, and we just started, it became, that would be the thing that we would all watch together as a family, because it was kind of fun, and there were elements of the show that, you know, the whole Chuck Bass character was so hilarious to me and to my kids that this person who's basically like 15 years old is drinking a scotch,
so
and wearing a smoking jacket and telling a man in his 50s, "You're through at Bass Industries. I bought out your controlling share 15 minutes ago, and the board has seen you out. Good day to you, sir. You're done. There's a plane waiting for you on the tarmac." And you're like, "What? I can't do that now." So we started watching it, and then I never do this. I never do this because I get to interview all these, you know, really cool, great people. I never ask. But when Penn did the show, I said, "I hate to do this, but can I get a selfie with you?"
No. No.
And tell him what I said.
What did you say?
No.
He said no.
Wait,
and he
really?
Shut me down. Yeah, yeah. And he said, "Don't."
Did you not take a selfie?
No, of course.
No, he said no. Like, so I said, "I never do this, but can I take a selfie with you?" And he was like, "Oh, yeah, sure."
That's
of course, he was
so
really
cute.
Nice about it. And I took it and I sent it to, we have a group chat for our family, which is just my wife, myself, my two kids. And I sent it, and they were all flipped.
That's
like, you know,
amazing.
And it's just
really
funny
sweet.
Because it was just this moment of, that's been something we've bonded over. So it's really fun.
I think as a family, you should start watching the one where I put people in cages.
Yeah. That's the next.
You know?
Once Beckett graduates.
Yeah. Anything that encourages people to masturbate in a public space.
But I did want to ask you, so as a Gossip Girl fan, what did you think of the reveal that Penn Badgley / Dan Humphrey was Gossip Girl?
Well, thanks for the spoiler. That's the one thing
I know
never...
that?
No, I did know that.
I was like, oh no, you ruined it.
No, I did know that. The only thing that blew my mind is it's not something I saw coming, but...
No one did.
But... Yeah.
The writers didn't.
No, trust me. Also, if you go back and look at all the episodes and try and see how someone would have...
Yeah, it's not possible.
It is not at all possible. So I just thought, like, okay, I see what they... You know, they were in a corner, and so why not?
They wrote their way out.
Beautifully.
I mean, what show isn't in that position at some
point? Yeah, exactly. But I think it's cool that you go down.
I agree. Like, as a person who was somewhat transparently, publicly, maybe inappropriately sometimes, shared about the resistance and conflict I had of being on a show
right.
like that, or just always kind of being in the public eye, I think it's interesting that I'm Gossip Girl.
You're Gossip Girl.
I
think it's a cool move, and it's just, I encourage people not to go and look through all the episodes and try and make it line up.
Yeah, no.
Because there are times where Gossip Girl's like, well, if you ask me, and like, no, you weren't there for that. That's the episode where you're trapped in a mine in Mexico, and, you know, XOXO, like, no! You tweeted that from the mine? Now people are going to go looking for the episode.
Yeah, with the mine.
You're trapped in a mine.
part of me wants to, just for the enjoyment of the real stands out there, to re-record the Gossip Girl voiceover, which, you know, Kristen Bell did so iconically. Yeah. But it's interesting that I've now done a somewhat comparably iconic voiceover show, like this show that I'm on now, and then to do Gossip Girl in my voice.
Yes.
That'd be amazing. Should we do that it right now?
I mean, if they have $10 million.
How much time?
He's got to get paid first.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah.
Well, winter came early to New York, but the real chill's on the Upper East Side.
Oh, that's a good one.
That was so good.
Oh, trust me. They love their, it's, yeah. they always take, Gossip Girl is obsessed with seasons. So yes. It's always like, well, yes. it's fall on the Upper East Side. Leaves are tumbling down, and so are reputations.
Oh, my God.
That's so good. Great.
Well,
okay, you're right.
Rewrite.
It's Groundhog Day in New York City. The groundhog saw his shadow, but there's no shadow of a doubt that love is coming to Madison and 13th Street.
Right? That's too low.
Too low.
That's at the mine in Mexico.
They also, my other favorite observation about Gossip Girl is that the parents are 6 years older than the children. That's always my favorite thing is you're like, well, I got to go ask my dad, you know, hey, Rufus. And he's like, hey, son. I'm like, wait a minute. That guy's 29. You're 23.
Yes.
You remember when I had you when I was six? It really makes me laugh. The parents are all incredibly young and fit.
Smoldering.
Yeah, and it's kind of confusing. Like, wait a minute.
Who's who?
Who's the father here and who's the kid?
Yeah.
We ask everybody. So you're not special.
This is getting intense.
Yeah.
If they could give us some money.
If you could go back to your 12-year-old self.
Yep.
What would you say? What would you do?
More sunblock would be the first thing I would say. There's a thing called skin cancer, and you were a ticking time bomb. I would say, you know, it's funny because they do encourage you in some therapy to really picture yourself at that age and what would you say to that person. And mine would be, it's all going to be good. It's all going to be fine. Mm. You're freaked out right now. You're anxious. Trust me, things get better. It's going to be okay. And I would have loved to have heard that. If I could have appeared to myself, I would have been, the kid would have been frightened.
Yeah. Just like,
when did I become an older woman? Do you comb your hair up like that on purpose? You're missing the point. I'm coming to you from the future.
What is that, hairspray?
Did you put hairspray in your hair? Why would you do that? Listen, quiet. You're missing the point. I come from the future. Wait, Trump becomes president? Isn't he like a real estate? Shut up! I'm not here long.
I don't have much time.
I don't have much time. It's going to be okay. Yeah, so what? I don't think it's going to be okay. I'm looking at you and you don't look okay. I'm medicated. Why are you medicated? There's depression. I think if I showed up in person to my younger self, it would go terribly. I mean, we'd end up bickering and yelling at each other. So, but yeah, the core message and the core message to young people listening is it does get better, and everything you're feeling is exactly what you're supposed to be feeling right now, and that's just the way it is. Yeah. And just onward, it will get so much better. That's what I say. Of course, a bunch of young people listening right now are like, I like things now, Dort.
Shut up, Conan.
Yeah. What's wrong with Conan? I don't relate at all to his childhood. I know that an intermission is not 25 minutes long, especially if the show is only 18 minutes long.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you so much. Well, thank you so much for having me. And this worked out really nicely, because you came on my podcast in Los Angeles, and I always try to leave town when it's my son's birthday. at his request. This is my gift to my son.
Today's listener-submitted middle school story involves a toilet. I'm actually surprised that it took us this long in a show about middle school to include a toilet, but it's a good one. Stick around.
Oh, shit. I think you gotta keep that. It's pretty good.
For sure.
I'm from Tamil Nadu, South India. My family, like a lot of middle-class families in my culture, were against me dating anyone. So I had to hide all of my relationships from them and sneak out all the time to meet my boyfriend. I was in a relationship with this guy for my tuition, just extra classes, coaching is very common in India. It was new and everything was exciting, especially because it was a secret. So there was this old unfunctional toilet room outside my tutor's house where my boyfriend and I would make out, and this kept going on for a while until some auntie figured it would be a good idea to store some old stuff in this place. So one day, she tried opening the door while we were inside. The door was never locked, and there was no reason for it to be now, so she got really suspicious and starts knocking and asking if anyone is in there. Obviously, we didn't answer, but more and more people gathered outside, and they're trying to break down the door. They were convinced there was a burglar inside. Miraculously, the door was holding, but now 10 minutes had passed, and Charit and I were panicking. If we'd been caught alone together, it would have been the end of us. So we texted our friends to see if they had ideas to help us out of this situation, and at the end of a chaotic group chat, we came up with a plan. My boyfriend decided to take one for the team. Slowly, he opens the door, and he told the auntie that he'd had an upset stomach and had to use the toilet, but he was too embarrassed to come out as he had no water or paper to clean himself. So auntie asked everyone to leave and went upstairs to get some paper towels and water for him. And as soon as she left, I bolted out of there and ran all the way home. You know, we were both so scarred by this incident that we never saw each other again.
You can listen to Conan Needs a Friend anywhere you find your podcasts, and you can follow Conan O'Brien on Twitter at Conan O'Brien.
Podcrushed is hosted by Penn Badgley, Nava Kavlin, and Sophie Ansari. Our executive producer is Nora Ritchie from Stitcher. Our lead producer, editor, and composer is David Ansari. Our secondary editor is Sharaf Entwistle. This podcast is a Ninth Mode production.
Be sure to subscribe to Podcrushed. You can find us on Stitcher, the SiriusXM app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If you'd like to submit a middle school story, go to podcrushed.com and give us every detail.
And while you're online, be sure to follow us on socials. It's at Podcrush, spelled how it sounds. And our personals are at Penn Badgley, at Nava, that's Nava with three N's, and at Scribble by Sophie. And we're out. See you next week.
I've had that happen many times where the talent has been like, of course, no problem. And then someone else comes in and goes, that's not happening.
Oh.
They will not be doing that.
I'm like trying to make eye contact with your team. Yeah. See if they're going to like kill it. No,
that's not, my team is completely, and I say this knowing they can hear me, they're, you know, very lame and they have no power. There's nothing they can do.
Stitcher.